Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
As we cover issues of health here on the program, in addition to finances, one of the things about retirement is eventually we get age. And there's a saying in the industry, 65 to 75 is the go-go years, 75 to 85 is the go-slow, and after 85 is the no-go years. But what if we can alter that just by the way we think or the way we live our life? And that is the subject of today's program. Joining me on the program is Dr. Alan Castell. He's written a new book, Better with Age, The Psychology of Successful Aging. You know, there's been a number of studies done about aging, especially now with the baby boomers moving into retirement. What was the genesis of your book? And I wonder if you could share a little bit of your background with our listeners.
I'd be happy to. I was really excited to write a book that captured the full picture of what happens as we get older. And I think a lot of myths exist out there. When I was younger, I had grandparents who were very lively and energetic. While they would sometimes confuse my name with my brother's name, they could remember things that were really important to them, like the price of groceries or the score of the game last night. So I was always caught by how my grandparents performed well on certain types of memory tasks, whereas for other things, they certainly showed some impairments. So as a cognitive psychologist, I'm interested in how thinking and reasoning and our attitude about aging can influence how well we age. I think probably one of the most interesting things out there is if you ask people how old they are, most people don't feel as old as their actual age. And so this concept of subjective age or how old you feel is really an important one. And after the age of 40, most people actually report feeling 20% younger than their actual age. And that has important implications for how we behave. And it can also be a very good predictor of how healthy we are. So if we feel younger than our age, we're probably in pretty good health.
And doctor, how much of that has to do with just the advances that we know about medicine today, also about physical exercise, the things we know about diet? How much of that is contributing to this idea that, you know, as 65, I forget when Social Security first came out, I think life expectancy was 65. Today it's closer to 85. How much of all of that is contributing to this aging process? In other words, we're living better as we get older.
We're certainly living longer. And I think that's the key now, is now that we have this longer lifespan, how can we add, you know, life to those years, not just simply years to our lives? And I think that's why our perspective matters. Now, if you think you have to retire at 60 or 65, that might be, you know, your choice or your decision. But these days, people are working longer into their life. That can be very stimulating. People are also switching jobs or taking on different jobs, maybe a consulting position, volunteering, doing the things they really care about. And since we might have a longer retirement, it's important to plan wisely, not just financially, but psychologically, to kind of build in the activities and things you want to do that will really make a difference in your life.
And as you have studied this, let's talk a bit about the psychology of aging, because this was a topic that was brought up in the book, The Blue Zones, Why People Live to Be Over 100. A lot of it had every bit to do with psychology, you know, belonging, friendships, social activity. And as a psychologist, you study this. I wonder if you might bring in some of the psychological aspects that can make that aging successful.
Absolutely. I think often what is overlooked are these social connections. And I often try and summarize kind of the most important things in terms of the ABCs of successful aging, where A is to stay active, physically active, keep moving, keep thinking. Also, to have a positive attitude about aging, because if you think positively about how you'll age, you have a better chance of aging well. B is for balance. And especially when we retire, we need to figure out what we want to do with our lives and have a mental balance, you know, balancing our career with our friends, our family. That becomes even more important when we retire, as we get older. So having a good balance between activities, profession, retirement, family, and also physical balance, because one in three after the age of 65, one in three people will experience a fall. And a fall can be debilitating. It can result in a broken wrist, arm, hip. It means you're not walking anymore. And we know walking is the best thing you can do to keep your brain sharp. So balance is incredibly important. And the last one is C, and that's for connection. And that's the often overlooked one, staying connected with friends and family, but also with what interests you. You know, if you're really interested in politics or bird watching or gardening, there can be a social community that can be tied into that, that you connect with the people who are also interested in these things. And when I say connect, I don't just mean having more Facebook friends or connecting on the internet. It's finding real people to talk to about what interests you the most.
And, you know, when you talk about these things, let's talk about what gets better with age. We think of as we get older, we're less mobile. Maybe our memories aren't as sharp. We don't move as well. In your opinion, as you have studied this, what improves with age?
Well, I think one thing that strikes people is mood. What's interesting is we often think that, you know, as we get older, we might get more depressed. But in actuality, the rates of clinical depression are often higher in college-age students than they are in healthy older adults. So I think what can get better with age is our ability to kind of tune into our emotions and be more aware of how we feel and what makes us happier. And a lot of research shows that happiness might actually get better with age, and certainly life satisfaction. When we look back on our lives, we might feel like there's things we've done and we're satisfied with, but there's still a lot we want to do. So I think from an emotional standpoint, our emotion regulation can get better with age. And one mechanism is a positivity bias, that when we look back or remember things or even focus our attention as we get older, we're more likely to focus on positive things. And that can lead to improvements in mood. Now, that doesn't mean we should ignore negative information or negative life events. But if we realize we might not have as much control over things, why not focus on what makes us happy and what's important in our lives? So I think that shift is something that can actually make us feel better about ourselves, enjoy life as we know it. And that might be different than a 20-year-old who's focused on different goals.
What is it about aging? And I've noticed this not only in my own life, but also with my clients, since we specialize in retirement planning, is friendships and social life become more important in some of the, you know, I've had my clients tell me some of the best friendships they have today were developed during their retirement years, very close friends looking out for each other, and how important that is to your social well-being.
Yeah, I think it's so important both to your social well-being and your physical health. And loneliness can be a big predictor of developing dementia and overall health. So if you have a good social connection, a social circle, that can be critical in terms of protecting you.
And when you take a look at this aging process, we have different definitions in life. What constitutes a, let's say, active lifestyle?
It's very challenging to define. And active doesn't just mean running around and doing a lot of things. You know, you want to be active in different areas, keeping your brain active. And that can be anything from, you know, people always think crossword puzzles are really important to do, but there's actually no good evidence to suggest that crossword puzzles are the only thing you should be doing. So if you enjoy, you know, walking with friends, if you enjoy bingo, if you enjoy bird watching, anything that has this kind of mental stimulation, but also a social component, I think can be just as important, whereas crossword puzzles might tend to be more solitary. We also know that some of the commercially available brain training devices are effective in terms of making you better at the games that you're playing, but don't necessarily transfer over to the things that you might care about in terms of remembering where you parked your car, or a name of a friend that you recently met. So I'm cautious to endorse brain training as a way to stay sharp. And in a sense, we're always training our brain, just talking to people about politics, being interested in the world. And I think more screen time could actually take away from time where we could spend being social, being active. So I think it's a fine line, a good balance between physical exercise, mental stimulation, social connection. Those are all things that really constitute staying sharp in older age.
You know, I've heard about brain activities. There's brain games like Lumosity that kind of sharpen the brain. But what about doing things that are creative? Maybe you didn't have the time during your working career. For example, learning to speak a foreign language, playing music, art. I was fascinated watching a biography of Winston Churchill. One of the ways he relaxed and stayed active is he painted.
And that's something you see a lot of once you've left your professional responsibilities or being a parent, that you can focus on the things that you've always wanted to try or do. And you're not doing them to become, you know, a master artist or a concert pianist, but taking on these sorts of things, whether it's music or language, learning a new language or reviving a language you once studied, can be very stimulating. And there's some good evidence showing that people who are bilingual are less likely to develop dementia. And so there's something going on in the bilingual brain that might actually be protective. And I think you can achieve those same things, not just by speaking a new language, but by taking up a new hobby or doing things like gardening or bird watching, anything that involves some sort of cognitive stimulation and social connections can be incredibly important.
What about some of the simple things that we do that, you know, when we think about staying healthy and active, we see commercials on television for, you know, exercise machines, becoming a gym rat. But you talk in your book about some very simple things, you know, like balancing, standing on one leg, things like you do in yoga. And also you emphasize walking. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, I think those are some of the best activities we can do and the lowest cost ones. And the walking is really important because it actually does help us achieve good balance. But after the age of 50, parts of our brain that are involved in memory, the hippocampus especially, start to decline by about, you know, 1 to 2% every year. And a research study found that when you randomly assign people to walk 3 times a week for 40 minutes, compared to just stretch 3 times a week for 40 minutes, the walking group showed an increase in memory performance, but also their hippocampus didn't decline. It actually grew in terms of volume by about 3% in the first year. So that shows that just this act of walking and moving can actually make our brain grow. And I think a lot of people are surprised by that because we think, you know, to improve memory, we should do memory tasks. But the brain and the body are connected. So if you're getting more blood flow to the brain through physical exercise, you can improve your memory. And also improve your balance. And balance is something we often take for granted. So people might notice that their memory's changing or it's harder to remember some names. But balance you don't really notice until maybe you're walking at night to the bathroom and you trip over a carpet and stumble and lose your balance. And again, that can result in a fall and a broken arm, hip, which can be terrible. So what I do and what I think can be very simple is I try and check in on my balance every once in a while. So when I brush my teeth, I stand on one leg in the morning and I see if I'm going to tip over after a minute. And it can be very challenging some days. And then I switch legs and do the same thing with the other leg for 1 minute. So I notice some days it's better than others and that my balance isn't always as good as I think it is. And so some of the simple balance training, you can do it standing up, holding onto a chair and letting go and going on your toes and going back and forth, can be very challenging, but a great way to train your brain and keep your memory sharp as well.
You know, one of the things that we do see as people age, and that is dementia and Alzheimer's, and a colleague of yours at UCLA, Dr. Gary Small, who has specialized in this area, the one thing that surprised me is he said most of things like dementia and Alzheimer's is really a lifestyle issue more than it is genetics. I wonder if you might speak to that for a moment.
I think that's really important as a psychologist because it shows that we do have some control over whether we'll develop dementia or not. And certainly genetics can play a role, but our lifestyle, ranging from diet, sleep, exercise, social connections, can ward off a lot of these signs and symptoms of dementia. And there's some really interesting evidence from a nun study. You know, nuns who had a strong social connection were less likely to develop dementia. Likely because of their social connection, maybe their, you know, their dedication. Even at autopsy, which is really the only way to diagnose dementias, forms of dementia, these nuns had the plaques and tangles that are a telltale sign of dementia, but they weren't showing dementia behaviorally. They were acting like they didn't have dementia. Their memory was still fairly sharp. So it shows that our lifestyle, and that's kind of an extreme version, I'm not suggesting we should become nuns, but that sort of lifestyle can certainly play a big role in whether we show the signs of dementia, even if biologically we might be developing, you know, some of these signs of dementia.
You know, one of the things you talk about in your book, and I want to address it now, why is loneliness the scariest part of retirement?
I think it's something people don't predict. I think we all look forward to retirement, and we might not take into account that a lot of our social lives are spent in our workplace. And this can be especially true for men who might not have a lot of social connections outside of work. When they retire, they realize that, you know, they miss some aspects of their job, and many of them are the social ones. And so loneliness can set in and it can have some long-term effects. People are less likely to be connected. They're less likely to be, you know, social. It leads to weight gain. It can lead to alcoholism and a lot of things that might be habits that were put off during a busy lifestyle can come back and play a negative role in how we age. And so I think that's why a lot of people might go back to a volunteer position, consulting, maybe even a part-time job. Some people go back and work at Home Depot or Uber just to have some income and some social connection that can prevent loneliness.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. One of my clients, when he retired, he was an editor at a publishing company, retired out to California, and he ended up being a guide at Hearst Castle. He just absolutely loved it, but it was totally different from what he had done during his working career. Do you find that as people retire and they have a lot of free time, as I mentioned, one of the things that Churchill did, he was a prolific writer, but he also painted a lot. Doing these kind of activities or learning these new activities really contribute to not only enjoyment, but to the part that you talk about, aging very well.
I think that's critical, and you have to find what works for you. There's not really one thing you can or should do, but you know, if you retire and then take up another responsibility or job, it should be something that you find interesting and stimulating. And this is great that your client is a guide at Hearst Castle, because this probably captures some interest in history and being around people and talking to people. You know, it's a job that he can focus on the things that he enjoys and maybe doesn't have the same deadlines or pressures he had in his other job. On the other hand, some people might find other activities or hobbies to be very stimulating, whether it's bird watching or volunteering or driving for Uber. Finding that thing or many things can be challenging, but once you do, you can really enjoy the second act of your life.
There's things that we see and hear stories about, like, for example, Colonel Sanders started Kentucky Fried Chicken when he was 65. We see even today in the business world, CEOs or founders and creators of great companies that work well into their 70s, 80s, and even 90s. Is there a decline in creativity as we age, or does it actually improve?
I think what's impressive is these role models of successful aging. And in my book, I discuss many role models from Jack LaLanne, John Wooden, Frank Gehry, Maya Angelou, Warren Buffett, people who we can really look up to and admire for what they're doing, both in the early part of their life, but even today. And I think part of that has to do with the level of curiosity and interest and creativity. And as we get older, we're less likely to care what other people might think. We might be more likely to pursue creative things like painting. You know, we're not going to become necessarily a great artist, but we can become something that we never thought we could do. So I think this level of creativity is a personal pursuit. And in many ways, in our older age, it's something that we feel is important. So this level of creativity can also lead to curiosity. We become more interested in what other people are doing and in ourselves. So in my book, I try and outline a lot of old age mentors, people we look up to. And sometimes it could be a grandparent or an aunt or uncle or parent where we think that's what, you know, I hope I can be like that. Or we notice some traits and we hope we can avoid those traits. So I think when we think about successful aging, we often know it when we see it, but we might not know what we need to do to achieve it. So I try and outline some of the simple things we can do psychologically to ensure that we enjoy older age.
You know, I think your book touches upon some of the things that we often ignore when we think about aging well or living to an older age. We think about diet, exercise, but you bring up a lot of the psychological aspects. If you were to sum it up in terms of the research that you've done, what do you think are the key secrets to health and longevity?
Well, I think it comes down to a few simple things. One of them is not to look for the one thing. There's probably not one thing you need to do. It's not crossword puzzles. It's not Sudoku. But when I interviewed John Wooden, who lived to 99, the famous UCLA basketball coach, he told me it really came down to two things in life that are the most important. And he made me guess. And I didn't know what they were. And as a good teacher, he then told me, he said, the two most important things in life are love and balance. Really find who and what you love, and then achieve balance in your life, both mentally and physically. And so I think that's a good summary. And like I said, he lived to 99. So I think there's a lot we can do to stay healthy and to stay balanced and continue to be passionate about the things we care about.
Well, we're certainly seeing a lot of examples of this in the financial industry. One of ours is Warren Buffett. He's almost 90 and as sharp as ever. Well, Doctor, this is a fabulous book. And if you're nearing retirement and you're maybe worried, what's retirement going to be like? What kind of lifestyle will it be? This is a great place to start because it really talks about having a frame of mind is just as important as your diet and your exercise. The name of the book is called Better with Age, The Psychology of Successful Aging, and we've been speaking with its author, Dr. Alan Castell. Doctor, thanks for joining us on the program. A great book.
Thanks so much. It was great talking to you. Have a great day.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.